right. Fucking Drew Bledsoe's giving. Is that the podium? This is awesome.
Yeah, and he just said he's going to make a Terry Rosé wine that is going to have an excellent finish. Which is just he's been workshopping that for a while because that's just a pretty good line.
I wish you didn't tell me that. Organic. Well, you know, I was recording that, so we'll just add that. We'll just put that at the beginning of the podcast.
Sounds good.
We'll hit the music now.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh my mama. Oh my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and this is the, what day is this? Thursday show with the Celtics winning Game 5, 114-112 in a wild, crazy, amazing, sometimes shitty, but just insane game with the 76ers. It's a 114-112 win. I can't even list off. I'm supposed to tell you all of the things we're going to talk about. I can't.
I don't even know what we're going to talk about.
I don't even know what we're going to talk about because it's just such a wild thing that happened, and we've just got to organize our thoughts organically. So you just heard Sam Jam Packard. He is live at the Garden. Well, not live because that – yeah, never mind. He's at the Garden. And so if you hear banging and shit behind him, that's what's happening. I, John Corrales, am here in front of multiple computers recording this podcast for everybody. Where the hell did we start? I suppose we start at the end and work our way backwards?
The most Marcus Smart ending to a game that could have possibly happened. He misses a free throw. Classic. He tries to miss a free throw. It goes in. He plays the best damn free safety I've ever seen in my career as a sports watcher and completely ends the game. This was actually like classic Marcus Smart impacts winning. He made huge plays down the stretch. He thought he was fantastic. 6 points, or I mean 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 14 boards, but just came up huge down the stretch, had a great find to Jason Tatum underneath the rim. I just thought he was everything you kind of expect from Marcus Smart. And he came up clutch down the end. Oh, the defense on Dario Saric. The game is tied. And how is your decision to try and post up Marcus Smart? Like, that is just – I know Dario Saric had some success doing it a little bit earlier in the game, but you don't challenge Marcus Smart in clutch moments. And doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
And but, he played it perfectly.
Yeah, that's the thing with Marcus Smart. And then, look, let's – big picture this for a second. The Celtics won this series 4-1 because they are better constructed. They had the right players in the right matchups. And in the playoffs, it is all about matchups. They had the right plan. And Philly is too stupid to win a playoff series of this type in the playoffs. And I phrase that in specifically that way for the edification of our Celtics fans because they like to hear things like that. But I really mean that in a just matter-of-fact way and not a slam of the Sixers. They're too young. They're like – it's like when we're all like in our early 20s. We're all too stupid to be successful. Like that, you got to go through the battles. Shit, I'm in my 40s and I'm too stupid to be successful. What the hell am I – you know, it takes a while to get battle-tested and get through the playoffs and learn your lessons. They had that one possession that I tweeted out somewhere in the second quarter where J.J. Redick was cutting through and banged into Simmons, and then he gave it to Embiid, and Embiid tried to pass it back and threw it out of bounds. Like, that stupid play, that's the type of shit that just does not let you win a series like this. It's going to take Philly a year, maybe two, to really get battle-tested enough to be in a position to win a game like this in a series like this. The Celtics, with Marcus Smart having gone through this many, many years, Brad Stevens having gone through this and learned, remember, it wasn't that long ago where people were like, ugh, I don't know about Brad Stevens not making great adjustments in the playoffs. Now he's making those adjustments. Even guys like Terry Rozier having gone through that stuff, Jaylen Brown having gone through that stuff before, having seen a deep playoff run, that matters. So, big picture, the Celtics won this game and this series, that many of these games could have gone another way because that experience, that poise, the ability to make the plays when Philly couldn't. To me, it just boils down to that. Inexperience versus experience.
I think that has a large factor to do with it, but they also got this huge Ben Simmons problem. He wasn't good tonight, and he wasn't good through the entire series, and he couldn't shoot. And they basically needed T.J. McConnell to come in and bail them out and run sort of semblance of an offense. It's not a surprise that in the second quarter, or I think it was the third quarter, Ben Simmons went to the bench, and that's when Philly made a huge comeback to really make this a game. I just thought he was, for him to be the star player and for him to have the ball in his hands, he even played, I think, his probably best game of the series tonight, and it's still not very good. So I don't know how they solve that. I think probably the development of Markelle Fultz will be a huge factor in there, but I think that's a huge issue for them moving forward. And so you put that on top of just general, like you said, inexperience, not necessarily making the right play. I think Embiid tried, realizing that he needed to be the kind of the amazing, I think he kind of took too much upon himself and kind of forced some shots in the end. So again, that points inexperience. And then at the end of the day, the 76ers just roster wasn't that great. I mean, they were really relying on Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, two guys from the buyout market. Like, it's kind of amazing that they ended up with the seed that they did. They ran off those games at the end of the season to kind of jump up the standings. But ultimately, this Philly team is not as deep as the Boston Celtics. And so even though a lot of pretty much everyone in before the series picked the 76ers because they thought they had more talent, if you just look at the lineups and who the Celtics were running out there, like the 76ers had to put in Justin Anderson into the game and really rely on him. Ultimately, I think this is going to be a great matchup for these two teams moving forward, like throughout the years. But at this point, I just think Boston was a more talented team. And then just in terms of better execution, tonight might not be the best example because this game was insane and sloppy and just at some points just bad. But Celtics playing at home with just better execution, Brad Stevens just calling the right plays, having a steady presence like Al Horford, I think was all huge for the Boston Celtics, who have not lost a game at home in the playoffs so far, and I think are in pretty good shape. This has to be the closest five-game series I've ever watched, though, because Brad Stevens will probably be the first one to tell you the Celtics could have lost game two, the Celtics could have lost game three, and they definitely could have lost game five. So you have to kind of tip your cap to the Sixers. Joel Embiid is quite good, even though I've grown to hate him. ultimately, the Celtics were just – I just think we're better in all kind of facets of the game.
Yeah, I don't want to make this all about the Sixers, but I do want to give them their props. They do have a lot of decisions to make. Embiid is good. I think Embiid has a lot more to work on than people may have understood coming into this series. He has very limited post moves other than bullying a guy and then hoping for a foul. I saw him do a couple of spins, you know, no real, if he's going to go and be a post player in today's NBA, then he's got to do it quick, because I spent the entire series talking about, yes, post Joel Embiid. And I didn't even care that he was scoring at will in the second quarter, because I said in the fourth quarter he's going to start missing, and he missed basically everything in the fourth quarter. In fact, let me pull up his fourth quarter numbers. Joel Embiid, one of six in the fourth quarter. So that
and it really felt like he was forcing it too.
It was very predictable because he gets tired. So not only does he, you know, is he predictable, but he's not in great shape. So, but Embiid needs to get the ball, make a decision quickly, and score, which means he has to set up his defender, which means he has to understand how his defender is positioned, and then play off of that and make his move with power, with decisiveness, and with speed. And he needs to do it like super, super quick. If that's not the case, then he needs to give it up. In today's NBA, that's what he needs to do. What he did all series long was hold the ball, spend 6, 7, 8 seconds holding the ball, doing his thing. And I will swear, and I don't know if J.J. Redick will ever admit this, but Joel Embiid's insistence on being a ball-holding, a ball-stopping post player didn't let J.J. Redick get into his flow. The one game where J.J. Redick was a killer was, what, game two, when the Celtics – I remember Terry Rozier made the mistake of helping off of Redick right away. He hit a three at the beginning of the game. He saw his first shot go in. He got hot, and that was the tone. Today, I firmly believe that Joel Embiid – being the back down player, holding the ball, not letting any of the perimeter stuff develop, caused J.J. Redick to just hunt for shots and not get shots in the flow, and that's why he missed so many. And that's probably why he wasn't in any sort of flow at the end of the game when he could have maybe iced it, and he missed. So that's part of Embiid's process. No pun.
You know what? I'm gonna blame this all on Ben Simmons again. I think it's like
that
what
too,
it makes
sure.
Like. But I think like what do you do if you're the 76ers offense other than kind of post up Joel Embiid? If like Ben, you don't have much shooting around Embiid. Saric was 3 for 3 from deep, and he was the second best player for the Sixers. If Redick's not hitting shots, then you have Simmons and McConnell out there who are not great outside shooters. I just don't know what the offense is. If it's Ben Simmons at the top of the key and you don't have you have his main defender at the free throw line and the paint is clogged and you don't have spacing whatsoever, I just don't know. I think as much as Embiid did pound the ball into the ground and was very deliberate in his post-ups, I just don't know what the 76ers didn't prove to me that they had another option on offense for consistent points. So I do think Embiid needs to be better. I think after the Embiid sucks chant, after he did that dumb little foul, he was played with much more power and energy and was just dominant. And it's I don't know if it's conditioning, it's stamina, but he certainly has the ability to do that and be just kind of scary. A guy who he really should be able to beat Aaron Baines one on one. I know Aaron Baines is the burliest of boys, but Embiid is way more athletic than him and should be able to at least finesse by Aaron Baines. Embiid should command a double team in the post every single time. And we saw the Celtics do more doubling of Embiid, especially when Horford was guarding him. And at some points it worked. It created turnovers. And at some point he found the passer and found wide open Dario Saric for a three. But that's how Embiid becomes more dynamic. And I realized that we just started, I think, the first 10 minutes of the podcast just shitting all over this 76ers. So the Kaizen has destroyed the process and progress – incremental progress over process. But let's talk about the goddamn Boston Celtics, who somehow managed a way to pull this out, managed to score 36 points in a quarter, completely give that up, and then pull it out in the end. It was a very Celtic series all the way around, with game three being nonsense, game two, the end of the first half in game two being a bit nonsense. This is the hospital Celtics are basically a nonsense team, and I'm here for it. It's been a wild ride.
I'm going to try to work in some of these tweets because we've got so many. I just can't get to them at the end.
The people are jacked up, and so am I.
I'm going to try to work a bunch. I want to thank everybody for tweeting and using the hashtag Rain and Jays or the hashtag Rain and Junk. I'm going to try to work them in as we go along and then get to a few later just to make it flow a little bit better. So let's start with @Celtics_Mike. who just simply says, gush about Al Horford. And so we will do that because it was Al Horford in the fourth quarter that stepped up and just had a stretch where he completely took over. First of all, he played the entire fourth quarter. He scored 6 points in the fourth quarter. He had 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. I mean, he was just awesome everywhere. Look, he had one of the most vicious dunks I've seen out of him maybe ever. Just a wonderful stabilizing force in the fourth where with 3 minutes to go in the fourth, Jason Tatum missed a jumper, and I said, uh-oh, because that was when the Sixers built a 5-point lead, I think it was. But between Al Horford and Marcus Smart, they came back, and Horford was just awesome. In the post, taking advantage of a mismatch, facing up, finding guys. It was just an amazing performance out of Al Horford. Even if he doesn't shoot, even if he doesn't score, the Celtics have to find ways to run their offense through Al Horford because he just makes so many good things happen.
He is phenomenal. The stretch that impressed me the most was it was tied at 94. The Celtics basically came back, scored 4 points, tied at 94. And then immediately the next three possessions are Horford post up, Horford off the glass, and then he strips the ball and gets it to Terry Rozier for a transition layup. And that was just like a huge run. I mean, the Celtics, of course, gave that up rather quickly, but that's just kind of the – he was super dynamic during that stretch. There's one play where he pick and roll with him and Smarf, and they rushed Smart hard, and he caught the ball, immediately fired it at Jaylen Brown in the corner. And it's just like that passing ability and knowing exactly where his teammates are and where they need to be and where he needs to put the ball. I thought it was fantastic. And then not to mention he transitioned from playing defense on Ben Simmons the entire game and Joel Embiid. And I'm pretty sure every single Al Horford post-up, he gets fouled and it's just never been called. And so to him to play with like that amount of poise and to be, like, I guess, just the all-around best player on the Celtics is damn right fantastic. And he is good, officially.
Al Horford is officially good. And then at Mauricio Green VR, this is a perfect Smart W. Man, when he lost that free throw after free throw, turned the ball over, I think he might have been drunk. I thought it coming some plays. Yeah, he was definitely drunk when he tweeted this. But this.
Oh, I thought he was talking about Smart being drunk.
Yeah, no. Mauricio Green was probably drunk. And if you weren't, then I'm just going to say you're irrational exuberance. But whatever, that's just a way for me to transition into Marcus Smart at the end of the game. Not just the free throw, not just the steal at the end of the game, which was just beautiful. Marcus Smart in the post was the best option for a significant amount of this game because Robert Covington was so terrible in this entire series. But in this game, especially, he was just disgustingly bad. But the Sixers had no choice but to play him. They had no choice but to throw him out there because of his height and his ability, theoretically, to defend. This is a guy that people were talking about putting on an all-defense team. He was the worst player on the floor, slightly worse than Marcus Morris, which we'll get to. But still, the worst player on the floor, basically whenever he was out there. So that made him sort of unplayable for long stretches, which meant Marcus Smart got to go post up J.J. Redick. He got to go post up T.J. McConnell. And anytime they had that matchup, it was an automatic either basket or trip to the line for Marcus Smart. And that was another huge factor for the Celtics down the stretch.
Yeah, I thought Smart was great in the post. Post Officer Smart is one of my favorite. And it's just it's kind of crazy that that's like was the Celtics it's like what do we do on offense, like I don't know, it's like throw it in the post to Marcus. But I thought he made a lot of the correct reads. I think he did a good job of getting the Sixers in foul trouble. Heavy whistles tonight. I guess in the past two games of the series, just a lot of whistles, which didn't make for the most fun game. But the Sixers got in a lot of foul trouble super early, and a lot of that was just because Marcus Smart being way too physical in the post, and it's not something they could deal with. Again, I think this is something we talked about right in the preview. This is not a great matchup for the 76ers just because they lack that kind of guard depth. And so getting Marcus Smart back and having him attack their size and him being just overly physical was huge for the Celtics. And I thought he was – he just came up super clutch. We didn't even mention when he had the putback of Jason Tatum missed a layup and he was right there. He had two huge offensive rebounds. I just thought he was a force for the entire night, and it's kind of wild how dynamic he can be, because you just don't expect your point guard, your backup point guard, to be just such an effective post player. And so I thought he was amazing tonight, even though he only scored four. Actually, I'm looking at his line: 3 of 8 from the field. That's classic Marcus Smart. But he went to the free throw line 13 times, which is insane.
That's amazing.
That is not something the Celtics have been known for, is getting to their free throw line. And just to see Marcus Smart at the line 13 times, he even did a classic Marcus Smart and missed 5 of those free throws. But the fact that he was there 13 times is damn impressive.
It really was. It really was. I want to shout out Maddie McP25 for tweeting out this awesome picture of Brad Stevens saying nothing but respect for my president. That's just an awesome, awesome photo. I want to also, Caraway 6, since we're on the Marcus Smart thing, where does Marcus Smart's game-winning interception rank among big postseason interceptions in New England? And I put a picture of Malcolm Butler's interception in the Super Bowl. Can we pump the brakes just a tiny bit?
Yeah, I think that one is more important.
It was somewhere behind that play. But Marcus Smart was awesome, and I don't think that obviously it's really interesting moving forward what Marcus Smart's going to mean to the Celtics, but tonight was awesome. Also awesome, Jason Tatum, who 25 points. This is what, his 7th straight game with 25 points. So 25, 4 assists, a steal, a few rebounds, 9 of 11.
He was dominant in the first quarter.
He was. He was.
They just had no answer for him, and it's actually interesting. He hurt his hand at some point and came back with a wrap, and I don't think he took another shot like after that. He was just in attack mode the entire time. So that's something to watch out for moving forward, is like what his hand situation is like. I don't think it was on his shooting hand, but still may not be something he's comfortable with. But he's another guy who got to the line because he was attacking so much. He was at the line 11 times, and I thought he was pretty big defensively. He was had actually no blocks. I thought I remember blocks, but I thought he played a generally solid game, and he was clutch late. He was great, and I think the unsung hero of this game is Jaylen Brown.
Jaylen Brown, yeah, he was going to be the next guy I talked about.
He came out hot. Really hot, attacking the basket. Like you were about to say, 24 points. He was 10 of 13 from the field. That's a crazy percentage. Yep. And he hit some huge threes. But him being aggressive, he just looked so much more athletic. And looks like the hamstring is like fully healed, because he just looked like he had more bounce tonight. And there was really he had some big moments. I thought they did some nice job starting offense with him to start the second half. I just thought he was huge, and probably the Celtics' best player out there, just on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, for a long stretch, he was the guy, and they had no options. And in starting him, that was the big adjustment for the Celtics, starting Jaylen Brown, because Shane Larkin is hurt, and who knows when he's going to come back. So the Celtics decided to stagger their ball handlers a little bit and put Smart on the bench. So that meant Jaylen Brown in the starting lineup. But what that also meant was he got to play up against either T.J. McConnell or J.J. Redick, and that's just bad, 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 bad. So J.J. Redick started off on him, and they just immediately went into the post, and Brown just started off on fire because he was backing down smaller defenders, shooting over the top, getting by them with his quickness. They had nothing that they could – they had no answer. And this goes back to the matchups. That if T.J. McConnell is your ace in the hole, then you've got problems, because TJ McConnell is small, and it just doesn't allow for the type of defense you need to play against a backcourt or a perimeter that has Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, because you need somebody to guard Rozier, and then what are you going to do? You put you still have Ben Simmons, so use his length on Tatum. Pick one, Tatum or Brown, but you're still starting J.J. Redick, and whoever J.J. Redick is guarding, you hunt him down, because Saric has to guard Horford, and Embiid's got to guard Baines. There's just, what do? You're stuck. And if you start Robert Covington, he's just such a minus in this series. They're stuck. There's nothing. So
they basically played Bellinelli off the floor. Like, Bellinelli was a huge guy, and he just couldn't. He only played 11 minutes tonight. It's probably the least he played in the entire series. The Sixers basically had to roll with their entire starting lineup because they just didn't have any answers off the bench. They even tried Justin Anderson. Anderson got in the game.
Yep.
And they just, Ilyasova was not like productive. It was just a really bad matchup issue. And the fact that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are basically, you know, like, pick your poison. Who are you going to have beat you? And both those guys are super young, and the core of the Celtics moving forward. It's just insane that those guys have evolved and become this dynamic and this much of an offensive threat, and still pretty decent defensive basketball players. While we're talking about it, just if you told me you're going to get 50 points from them, it's wild. It's insane. Like, just there was no real way for them, and their matchup nightmare, because you need some sort of size to guard Tatum, and Jaylen Brown is super athletic. It's in the fact that they can switch on defense and pretty much guard similar players. I just don't know what the recipe is for kind of stopping them moving forward if they're going to play this well and shoot this well.
I just want to say how hilarious it is that the Garden turns into a firing range whenever you do a podcast, because it was quiet and then you start talking, and then I swear behind you, somebody's like firing off a 9mm.
I think they're just like slapping rugs together. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I was like looking around.
It's funny. Like, it's become almost like a signature for you in the playoffs. Like, oh, I'm going to talk when the loudest things are happening. Now, when you're not talking, it tends to get quiet. But when you are talking, it's like they decide, oh, okay, Jam's talking. Let's, demolish half of this building.
Well, everyone wants to be on the Rain and Jays, so they're just doing their part to get on the Rain and Jays. I mean, it's a podcast for winners. I mean, and we've done 6 podcasts from this building after Celtics wins. One, while I was in Las Vegas, that's a wild card. We'll throw that out. But and every single time, it's been noisy as hell. So I think it's a key to success for us.
Sure, it works. Whatever. Let's go with it. All right. Last thing from this game, because it's over. The series is over. But Marcus Morris
was atrocious.
Was just so bad. Just so bad. Like, so, so bad. He did really almost nothing right.
Made all his free throws. Okay,
so that falls under the almost nothing. So he was 4-for-4 from the line. He hit one basket. 1-of-10. Okay. Is this just the product of the matchup? Or do you think that for some reason he's just kind of run out of whatever magic he had going on at the end of the season against the Cavaliers? Let's start moving forward. Do you think he can find against the Cavaliers and their crappy bench some semblance of a renewed spark for the Celtics?
Of course he can. He's ISO Mook. Like, I really think that he is a guy who's going to keep shooting and going to keep shooting with confidence. And as soon as he sees a couple go through the net, I think he's right back there. And they're going to need Marcus Morris, just because he is a very competent, as competent of a LeBron, I don't even say the word stopper, but a LeBron hopeful container that the Celtics are definitely going to need moving forward. And so I think like, you're going to get a 1-for-10 Mook game, and you just – you have to expect him to keep shooting. And you're right, he has not been – he's not been as good as and as hot as he was down the stretch of the season. He hasn't had a great game in the playoffs. He's had decent in some games, but shoot or shoot. Like, he's, the only way I know how to get out of that is either to take him off the floor, which I just don't think is an option. The Celtics are so kind of in need of bodies right now. Like, he's going to need to play at least 25 minutes – that he, you're going to have to get, have him keep shooting. Like, I just don't know what, like, that's Mook. Keep shooting. And I just, like, I think, would you, like, would you be shocked if he, like, scored 25 in a game against the Cavs? I wouldn't.
Not at all. I wouldn't be shocked either way. Like, but tonight was just so bad. Like, I'm sitting here talking about Covington, and Marcus Morris was just about as bad. He did some good things on defense, a couple. So he wasn't useless, but look, the Celtics are, they're stuck. They're stuck. They don't have a lot of guys to play tonight. They played, literally 8 guys. So they didn't have, like, they couldn't put Monroe in. Obviously, like, Yabu, Nader, like, that's it. They don't have the guys. They played Morris, Smart, and Ogilvy off the bench, and Rozier played 40 minutes. Somehow they managed to keep Brown to 31 minutes and Baines to 24 minutes, but Tatum played 39 plus, Horford played 38 plus. It's a lot of minutes. Luckily for the Celtics, the schedule now moving forward is actually pretty good. So game one is Sunday at 3:30 in Boston. So 3:30 on ABC. So the Celtics are now off on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They don't have to travel. This is why this win was so, so important. They didn't have to get on a plane and get to Philly, even though it's a short flight. Just getting up in that pressurized tube just messes with you. You get to sleep in your bed tonight. It's just really, really nice. So they play on Sunday at 3:30, then Tuesday at 8:30, and then not again till Saturday at 8:30. So they've got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So they've got 3 games in the span of a week, or actually a week and a half because of the days off leading up to it. So just a really nice schedule for them to kind of get themselves together, rest. Al Horford is probably banged up. Everybody's probably banged up, and they get this opportunity to kind of get themselves right for this series. So let's focus now on the Cavaliers for a few minutes, because we've got a lot to talk about before we get to that game anyway. So,
Justin Rowan, you are a coward.
let's just start with, who guards LeBron? It's going to be Jaylen Brown to start, right?
It's going to be a committee, but I assume Jaylen starts on LeBron. But I think they're going to want to throw some size at him. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Morris, we see some Ogilvy, see some Marcus Smart even. I mean, I don't know. There's no answer to beating LeBron, but trying to make him shoot from the outside, it seems to be the best solution. But I think it's going to be by committee. I don't know. Has anyone come up with an answer for LeBron?
No.
I think you might see some Tatum out there, but Tatum still feels not strong enough. I do think Brown will have, like, he had some moments against LeBron last year. So I think Jaylen Brown's your first answer, and hopefully this time off will get him that hamstring fully rested and fully healthy. But I don't. It's got to be a committee. It's got to be just throwing fresh bodies at LeBron for the entire time and really trying to force Kevin Love to and, like, J.R. Smith to beat you.
Here's the bigger question. I should have started with this. Do the Cavaliers work out an adjustment where they start Tristan Thompson? Because Tristan Thompson has historically been the matchup problem for Al Horford. Can't keep him off the glass. Thompson has consistently been a problem for Horford in these series. Last year against the Cavaliers, he kind of destroyed Horford down low on the glass. And so I would expect the Cavaliers to switch up their starting lineup. I don't know that they take Kevin Love out, but maybe they go Hill, Korver, Love, LeBron, and Thompson go big? Or maybe
here's the I think if they put in Thompson, though, that's when you bring in Aaron Baines. And the Celtics defense has been much better the entire year with Baines on the court. And so you throw Baines as just a guy to clog up the middle as a rim protector, as a burly boy that he is. I don't know if that's like the immediate solution for the Cavs. It's going to be very interesting, of course, because you would think that the Celtics would try and counter either with Baines. And if that's not working, then you try it with Horford and try to play five out and kind of spread the floor that way. I don't know. I think it's going to be the Cleveland front court is going to be the most interesting part of the series, because even Kevin Love at the five, even if the Cavs go small, Kevin Love is a damn good offensive rebounder, and he's been pretty good against Horford in his career as a Cavalier. And I think, oh my God, do I hate Kevin Love. But his ability and how he plays, I really think, will dictate how this series goes, because I don't know if Tristan Thompson, one, he's just not playing as well as he had in past seasons, and I don't know if going big it will necessarily be the solution for the Cavs, just because, like I mentioned, I think Baines is kind of just means better defense for the Celtics, and that's going to be the game of the series. It's going to be the Celtics, whether or not they can slow down like the Cavs offense at all. The Cavs have a crazy offense. They're especially when LeBron's playing like 45 minutes a game. And so can the league's best defense slow down one of the league's best offenses enough so that the Celtics offense can have a chance to kind of to be in this game against one of the worst defenses in the league. And so I don't know if Thompson is their best answer for the Cavs offense. I think going small is the best for them. And I think the Celtics may be well matched to do that. But it brings up, that means you're going to have a lot of Marcus Morris minutes, and he needs to be making shots if he's going to be playing that many minutes.
Yep, he's going to be, I don't know if I want to say it this way, but he could be the most important player in this series. That just because of how much the Celtics need out of him, it's going to be really interesting. That, like you said, that defense that Cleveland has is pretty terrible. And I'm inclined to think that it's the classic pick your poison against LeBron, and I don't want him being a passer. It's very simple to me. LeBron has to be a pure scorer if you're going to beat the Cavaliers, which I know sounds nuts. I know he could probably average 50 in this series. I feel like I've been consistent in my feelings for guarding a star player, especially when he's got very little help around him. Now he's got Kevin Love, and Korver can still go off and hit shots, but Korver can only go off if he's being fed the ball. George Hill can only go off if he's being fed the ball. Same for all of these other guys, Jeff Green, Clarkson, Nance, whoever gets thrown out there. All of those guys can only get going if you overreact to LeBron and he becomes a triple-double threat. If he scores 50 and has two assists, I am thrilled about that defensive effort against LeBron James. Just shut everyone else down. Try your best like you did against Simmons. Obviously, there's some similarity in their style of play in that they're both big and they can, you know, drive and dish.
But one is a coward and one is the best basketball player to ever live.
Right.
So it's like that's dangerous game. That's like blood sport. But that's what happens when you play the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like that's what happens when you play the best players. Like you're going to have to make a decision, a difficult decision, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Just the history of LeBron in Boston. Fantastic.
Let me ask you this question. Can the Celtics score in this series against the Cavaliers, against their defense, do you think the Celtics can average more than 100 points a game?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you think the Celtics can hold non-LeBron players to less than 60 points a game? So everybody not named LeBron James, can you combine to hold J.R. Smith, Kevin Love, Kyle Korver, George Hill, Tristan Thompson, Jordan Clarkson, Jeff Green, can you get those guys to average less than 60 points a game?
Perhaps. When you frame it like that, yeah, but that means you're just basically single covering LeBron for the entire game. You're basically treating him like Ben Simmons.
Can LeBron average 40 points in a series?
Yes, I think he can. Especially if you're like playing all his shooters and you're like running them off the 3-point line like they did the 76ers and not like helping LeBron, I think it could go off. Psychologically, it's just difficult to kind of just let LeBron dominate for the entire game, but maybe Brad Stevens is the mental wizard and mental alpha that we need to just kind of ignore the noise and just let LeBron go for 40 or 50. But that's a wild proposition, and you're talking loco, and I like it.
Yeah, well, look, here's the thing. That I just think that as great as he is, who averages 40 points a game in a series? That I think LeBron, against Toronto, he did things against Toronto. I really do feel like Toronto got shook about 44 minutes. I mean, not sorry. About 44 minutes into game one. That last 4 minutes of game one, that was it. That's when the series ended, and they just couldn't do anything about LeBron. I feel like LeBron has played so much, and if he plays the minutes that he needs to play to score as much as he needs to score, he's going to get tired, he's going to miss shots, and he's going to start settling for jumpers at the end of these games. That you have to rope-a-dope the Cavaliers if you're the Celtics, and you have to rope-a-dope LeBron James, and you just have to sit there and take flurry after flurry after flurry for quarters 1, 2, and 3. So in the fourth quarter, he is sitting there trying to bury you with three-pointers and not passing the ball and not driving and dishing. That, to me, is how the Celtics have to get by LeBron James. Just because J.R. Smith is not trustworthy, Kevin Love is not trustworthy, especially if his hand is still bothering him. Kyle Korver is a shell of himself, except when he's being fed for wide-open shots. He can still shoot the shit out of the ball, but that's about it. George Hill, not great. All of these other guys are not great. If the Celtics can hold those other guys to less than 60 points combined and let LeBron do what he's going to do, sometimes that's not going to work. But it's a 7-game series. All you need to do is have it work 4 times out of 7. That's it. If the Celtics can get 100 points a game against this shit defense that the Cavaliers are throwing out there, then they can, I think, win this series, which is insane. I know it's insane, but there's a way that they can win this series. They're not going up against a Cavs juggernaut. They're going against LeBron and his band of merry men that play terrible defense, that are unreliable, that went to 7 games and damn near loss against the Indiana Pacers. And I think the Celtics have a version that is similar. They can do a lot of the similar things than what the Pacers did. It's not crazy to think that the Celtics can win this series. And shit, the Celtics could go to the goddamn NBA Finals.
Without Kyrie Irving, without Gordon Hayward, you're right. I think the Celtics have a much better chance in this series than they did last year. They just have higher end talent, and I think the Cavs defense is so much worse than it was last year. Oh, also the Cavs don't have Kyrie Irving. He's the guy chilling with Yabu on our bench just doing God knows what. So I do think the Celtics have a chance. It's just LeBron's mighty good, and so it's tempting fate to kind of let him shoot. But you're right. I like your logic is sound in that I think you have to force the other guys not named LeBron to kind of step up or not. Yeah, I don't know. I've talked myself into a frenzy just because I'm confused now. I'm excited, and now I've lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
It's. It's hard to do. It's hard to play this because if you see a guy getting abused, it's hard to not help him. There's a tendency to help off of guys when they're getting crushed. You have to sit there and say, if it's Jalen, if it's Mook, if it's Shemi Ojeleye, who's going to get opportunities to guard LeBron James. If it's Yabu because of foul trouble, it doesn't matter. You sit there and you give him a salute and you say, give him hell, young man, and you let him go take his lumps as long as the other guys on the Cavaliers don't get going. Because I'll tell you what, if that's the case, then J.R. Smith, whenever he gets the ball, is going to force some really dumb shots up. Kyle Korver is going to force some really dumb shots up. These other guys are going to force some really dumb shots up because they're going to want to shoot too because they want to play. It's like, hey, I want the ball too. Can I play basketball too? And that's where it all starts to fall apart for Cleveland. LeBron can't do it all. He can't shoot every time. Teams take 80, 90, 100 shots a game. LeBron James is not going to take all of those shots. Other guys are going to shoot. Make those other shots as uncomfortable as possible. LeBron's not going to shoot 70, 80%. It's not possible. He's going to shoot, even if he shoots 50%. Fine. 60%? Fine. Let him shoot that. Let the other guys shoot like shit and force their stuff. I'm telling you, it sucks, but it's a total rope-a-dope that this Celtics team, with the injuries that they have, that's their chance to win this series. It's there. It's right there for them. It sucks. What really sucks is that the Celtics had this path laid out for a trip to the finals, and it was right there to take advantage of it with Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving and to maybe have people talk about, hey, maybe the Celtics have a shot this year. They don't have a shot at winning the finals, but if they get there, I'll make a case for it. That's for goddamn sure.
Well, they are, two and one in the Oracle in the last three times they played there. They played the Warriors better than anyone else. You can't have a fixed mindset. You got to have that growth mindset. But it's going to be damn fun once this Eastern Conference Final starts on Sunday.
All right, let's wrap this up. We've been talking, and I'm starting to feel like I'm getting a little loud and obnoxious and kind of like ranty. So let's wrap this up with a few tweets, one way or the other, and then your junk drawer. Okay. Let's see. A lot of Marcus Smart tweets. Holy shit, I'm looking down. Marcus Smart tweets on the Rand Jays. Let's just see. At R. Emery 89, tonight was prototypical Baines. We need to keep him just for the Embiid matchup going forward. It's going to be interesting what the Celtics do. I don't think Baines comes back next year, but who knows? Maybe things change. But yeah, the Embiid matchup going forward is going to be super, super interesting. But for this series alone, I think that the fact that Baines played Embiid as well as he did is where you can say that's probably where this series turned, because that was supposed to be an easy win for the Sixers. Embiid versus Baines is an easy, oh yeah, that's an advantage Sixers, but it wasn't for most of the series.
No, Baines was fantastic. The fact that he was able to single cover Embiid was kind of insane. Now, some people will say that he fouled Embiid on the final play. I didn't see it. Of course, it was from the opposite basket from where I was sitting. I had no angle on the play, but I didn't see the foul whatsoever. And I thought Baines was just – the fact that he's shooting corner threes is crazy, and that's exactly what he needed to do. And he really stepped up his game, and he – like I was thinking about it, he is such an upgrade over Amir Johnson. Like I love the big dog, but – just in terms of his size and his physical presence, and he's a huge reason why the Celtics defense was the best defense in the league this year. So he deserves all the credit in the world. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back, if it's like at something at the veteran minimum or something smaller than that. Maybe he's going to command more money just because he played so well this year. But I think he's damn important, and I wouldn't be surprised if he just like – I think someone tweeted this. He's just going to come back and play for the Celtics on one-year contracts for the next 8 years.
Maybe. Look, it's possible. I don't know that the market for him is huge, but he's shown his value. And look, he's shooting 50% from three in the playoffs. Like, that shows a little bit of value, that somebody can sign him and be like, not that you expect him to hit a ton of threes in the season, but he can hit him. He can hit him. And he's kind of found a little bit of a groove. He's evolving his game, which I think is just it's huge when you are a big, burly center, and you can evolve your game. So good for him. He's gonna get some money somewhere. He's gonna get paid to play basketball in the NBA, and maybe it'll be with the Celtics. Let's see. You know what? That's the Rain and Jays hashtag is a bunch of Marcus Smart. Thanks everybody for sending those tweets in. Let's go to the Rain and Chunk. We've been going for almost an hour now, and we probably should wrap this up soon. So let's just get to the Rain and Junk. At Mike_Hynek, in a series where we proved we are better than Philly in many ways, I think the one way that matters most is our Aussie has a much better accent. Yeah, Ben Simmons is Australian, but he doesn't sound Australian.
No, and I'm going to resist the chance
man,
to do...
Oh, man, I was waiting. I was sitting there like, you're going to do the Australian.
Right. No, right. I'm not.
Doesn't sound Australian.
Iron Baines is a big, burly boy.
Oh, we're so
Oh, horrible. God, that's terrible.
We're terrible at that.
I'm not good.
No. At the Sus Bus, pretty sure I heard Jam Packard in the background at Baines' cool as a cucumber comment. I don't know what the cool... Did he do that?
I think he said it in his post game. You didn't hear me giggle, but because I'm up here, you can hear me. But Aaron Baines saying cool as a cucumber is something I would giggle at. So I think that's a fair accusation. Just doesn't have to be true.
At Chris Volkernick tweets the photo of the guy in the sign. Process of elimination. Hilarious sign. Awesome sign. So good that I'm mad I didn't think about it. From at Sir Benj Zero, did Embiid go straight to the locker room after the game? I believe he did.
He did. He was mad online because the whole crowd was chanting that he sucked, and then he sucked. And so he was upset. I don't really blame him for that. There's no handshake line in basketball.
Now,
people can go to the locker room. That's a non-story in my eyes.
It's a non-story necessarily, but it does show a little bit of insight. Like I think he's a lot more sensitive than he lets on, and he talks a lot. And if you're gonna be a guy that talks a lot of shit, then you have to be willing to sit there and take it when it comes your way. So that is all I got to say about Embiid. You have a choice to make. If you're going to sit there and, like, it's fun. It's a lot of fun, especially when it's not in a playoff series, so it's not in your face. But when it's, you know, from a distance, it's fun. Or if you're a Sixers fan, it's fun. But if you're going to sit there and talk shit and say things like, point to your head and say, I'm in your head, then when it doesn't go your way, you have to sit there and take it as good as you give it, or else you look like an idiot. And I don't want to have another player in the league be that way, because Dwight Howard already has that market cornered, and I don't want another Dwight Howard in the league. I want Embiid to be good. I want the Celtics to beat Embiid on a regular basis, but I want him to be good while that's happening.
You want him to handle it well while he takes his repeated
exactly.
beating.
I want him to... And look, this is the beauty of a rivalry. If you're going to have a rivalry, and maybe sometimes the Celtics lose, that's going to happen, but I want this to be a battle. If you're going to be in battle, and you're going to fight, and you're going to go down there in the post... And this is another thing that bothers me about Embiid. Because I was a post player. I get the mentality. You're going to go down there. You're going to get banged around. You are initiating contact. You are drawing contact. You are giving contact. Sometimes you're going to get hit and it's not going to get called. And so what? Maybe you don't like it, but you can't bitch and moan about it after the game. You can't let it affect you. And after the game, when somebody beats you, after you guys are going head-to-head, like if I was playing Aaron Baines and we were going at each other and I got the worst of it and I lost, afterwards, you know what I do? I do personally go seek him out and I shake his hand and say, you know what? Good game. You gave me everything you had. I gave you everything I had, and you were better than me. Now, that just means I got to go figure out how to be better than you the next time we meet. To me, that's what hard-nosed post-basketball is all about. And until Embiid learns that lesson, he's never going to reach his full potential.
Fair.
Boom. Done. Next. Let's see. Addie Shep, does Harry, does Harry still get a ring too, even if he only played 5 minutes this season? Yes.
Yes. Yes, he does. But that is getting way ahead of ourselves.
Do you have a junk drawer?
Oh, I got a lengthy one.
All right.
After game four, Franklin the dog, BF dog from the 76ers, was tweeting at me about his stupid ladder thing, and I just want to rub it in Franklin's face. You got a stupid trick, and everyone hates it. So screw off, Franklin.
I love your beef with the anthropomorphic costume dog.
Yeah, he's a terrible ladder trick. Brad Stevens before the game, talking about not getting a coach of the year vote, which one is absurd, but just him like saying that there, if he had a vote, he would vote for every other coach in the league. It's just classic Brad. One day he will admit that he is good.
Okay,
but that was not today.
Can we just throw this out there? And this is a question from @Trevor_E36. Why is everyone making a big deal out of this coach of the year outcome? Isn't the official one? It isn't the official one, right? Media members vote on that one. It's true. Can we just, I want to clear that up, that this was the Coaches Association Award and all 30 coaches voted and you get one vote. You didn't get to vote for a second place. You didn't get to vote for a third place. And it's still like a little like absurd that he didn't get one vote. But if everybody's saying I'm picking between Dwayne Casey and Brad Stevens, like, you know, I think Dwayne Casey deserves it because of this. Like that makes much more sense. So that whole Coach of the Year thing was a little bit blown out of proportion, but it did give us classic Brad Stevens, who just was incredulous at the thought pregame that anybody would even think to vote for him because he puts himself 30th out of 30, of course.
We should make a parody of the most interesting man in the world with the most humble man in the world, and this is Brad Stevens deflecting compliments. That being said about coaching, Brett Brown saying the word Horford, it will always make me laugh. Brett Brown is a gem. I'm a big fan of him. This game, frankly, was in the books before the game because last night the 76ers hired some sort of mentalist or magician to entertain the team, and that's just a soft move. I was not a fan of it. Moving ahead, confetti. Terry Rozier updated his Scary Terry shirt to include confetti. I thought that was a cool-ass move.
Beautiful. Oh, that was awesome.
There's a guy who did a shooting contest. He brought his own confetti. He taped it onto his shirt. I thought that was a cool move. And to the lovely listeners who won some confetti after game three, I can finally send it out. I felt really bad about sending out celebratory confetti before the Celtics had wrapped up the series. But now that they've done it, envelopes go out tomorrow. If you won the confetti, congratulations. You'll be receiving that into however long the USPS takes to deliver it to you. I'm going to have another hot take. You know the dance that all the youth are doing where they like swing their arms back and forth and sometimes it's behind them and sometimes it's in front of them? I hate it. And the kids need to go back to dabbing. If you're on the Jumbotron, you dab. You don't do this silly arm swing dance, and I don't like it. You got old people doing it. It's not for me. And it's primarily because I have no idea how they do it, and it's frustrating to me. But yeah, that's about it. Trying to power through here. Marcus Smart is Geodude. That's a Pokemon reference. I don't expect you to get that.
Nope.
But Geodude for some reason floats, but he's just a rock with giant combat muscles. No one ever explained to me why he floats. Moving on, they made Baines bleed his own blood. That's always fun. They actually tried a Scary Terry chant tonight, which I thought was not that great. I don't know why, but it just wasn't Tito Three Sticks. There was a great moment where they're talking about Mook, where there was a conversation between Sopan Deb and the Rifts Man just about Mook's struggles in the playoffs. And I'm like, on the one hand, we have the Rifts Man, who's just like a wild, wild character. And then we have Sopan Deb, who's like a very legitimate newspaper reporter for the New York Times who covered Donald Trump. And just to see them both commiserating about how terrible Mook was tonight, I thought was a hilarious moment for Celtics Twitter. And then at the end of the game, the Celtics, as the confetti hypothetically would be dropping from the rooftops, they play Summertime by Will Smith, Philly rapper, basically saying, go Philadelphia 76ers, enjoy your summer in the city of brotherly love because you have no more to do here. I thought it was a great a great troll move. And wow, fastest junk drawer I've ever done, but that's it.
I would have loved for some fans to have come in and somehow smuggled in some confetti and just dropped that from like the balcony.
If I hadn't promised it to all the fans of Rain and Jays who wrote reviews, I was highly considering throwing it off the balcony.
But it should have been the red, white, and blue confetti, not green and white or anything like that. It would have been great if I'd thought about this before. I would have just gone out there before the game and just handed out to anybody sitting in the balcony red, white, and blue confetti. So if the Celtics won, you could just toss it over the side yourselves. That would have been fun. I want to give a junk drawer shout out to the SportsCenter Twitter account that tweeted out a picture that says two top three picks, two very different series, and it's Jason Tatum side by side with Markelle Fultz.
Ooh.
Oh, this is cold blooded. So it puts Tatum's numbers 37.8 minutes, 23.6 points, 3.4 rebounds, 3.2 assists. By the way, statistically, that's an awesome line for the series. Markelle Fultz, 0000. That's some shit that Weird Celtics Twitter would do. I'm surprised that that SportsCenter Twitter account did it. That is just really, really hilarious.
Weird Celtics Twitter has some compassion, actually, and we kind of laid off Markelle for the entire series, realizing this you don't want to pile on. The man's had a bad year. Let's focus on Ben Simmons being a tremendous coward.
That's much better. All right. We have talked for a very, very long time. We hope you have enjoyed this very, very long podcast, and there will be another podcast tomorrow, maybe a little bit more forward-thinking with the Cavaliers in the Celtics series. That may not involve as much yelling. It will not involve me because I will not be on the podcast. I'm traveling and taking a couple of days off and going down to New Orleans for a couple of days. So any of you New Orleans listeners, hit me up. I'll go out. We'll have a beer or something, or an old fashioned, which is a much more appropriate drink for New Orleans. But a little bit of a break before we start the game one Sunday, Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals after beating the Sixers in Game 5, winning the series 4-1. Awesome, awesome, awesome series. Just an amazing effort from these guys. People were picking them to get beaten by the Bucks, and they get past Milwaukee, and then they they handily win the series 4-1. There's no other way to say it, even though some of most of the games were tight. They won all of those games. So on to Cleveland. Thank you for listening. If you are not a subscriber, please subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you find your podcast, search for Locked On Celtics. If you are a subscriber, give us that 5-star rating. Give us that good review, because that just pushes us up further in the rankings. And I can't talk anymore, so I'm going to stop talking and just say thanks for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Kaizen. I decided I wanted that to be my new sign-off.
Fantastic. So we'll go with it.
Cool.